You're listening to the Online Pastor Coach Podcast, the show that brings you new and fresh ways to connect with your digital church, with your hosts, Joey Santos and Jason Morris.
But man, I'm very excited. Jay, thanks for joining us. This is what it is, a very open conversation.
Sweet. We're just having a fun conversation.
Exactly.
Catching up. I want to know, okay, because you were just talking about like change, some things change, some things stay the same. Your church is going through a lot of changes right now.
Yeah.
And it might even mean like, you know, changes that we're not even like the average guys on the inside know about, like the real changes that are happening, that are underwater that no one sees. So what's going on with the with the new guy and stuff like that? I like how he teaches the camera better. You know, he does.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's some things where I'm like, dude, this could be really cool, you know. Yeah. But I gotta hear what's going on.
Yeah, man, it's honestly one of those bittersweet things. You know, I've had the blessing to be able to serve under, you know, Rick for
absolutely,
you know, the last 12-13 years, and you know,
Rick, what a legacy.
And it's been a blast. It's been really cool to watch the last couple of weeks. He's brought in some of his friends who haven't spoken at the church for various reasons, but it's cool to watch them kind of give him kudos in a way, like and it just shows who he is and who him and Kay are. But I do think, though, one of the things that, you know, I think for sure we're moving into a new season, but I think there are things that when you're leading a church and you started the church and in your, you know, you're entering into your late 60s, that you just can't do certain things because you don't use technology in certain ways. You kind of have your own process. Like I have an uncle who's not anti-technology because he works for a large space engineering program. He's very high up, but he has this joke. He always tells me that he still uses a beeper, and he says, like, I don't need a phone. And I always joke, like, you don't need a phone because you have tenure. Like,
right.
You don't need to prove yourself. You've already proven yourself. So yeah, People will go out of their way to get you. And I don't think you can say that to a 20-year-old. Like, they have to have some of these things to survive in this ecosystem. And let alone,
how many PAs does he have?
I know, that's the question. Quite a few. But I think, just, you know, I've been kind of a student of who Andy is and just been watching and learning and listening to everything he's done. And he's going to embrace some of these things in a very new and exciting way. And I'm very, very excited about where we're going, and it's going to be different and it's going to be challenging. But you know, I we've talked about this many times casually, that, you know, one of the things that's kind of in our DNA is that we really believe in online and how it reaches people, but we still at the root of it see, I think our campus strategy of planting physical location is so it's just in our DNA, that I see how Andy thinks, and I'm just very excited about how we can maybe continue to leverage some of our online community to launch new stuff. And so I think it will go to another level, but I'm it's kind of weird. We're in this like in between stage before he starts in September. So it's like kind of this antsiness.
Oh, okay.
Let's just go. And so Rick doesn't have his final day till like the first week of September. And so, so it's kind of, you're in this, like, you know, we're stuck in the in-between zone. We're like in purgatory. It feels
okay.
Like, come on, let's get it. And so it's not till like the weekend of September 12th that he gets commissioned, and then, he gets going. And so we're just kind of, it's kind of, you know, take your vacation and get ready, you know?
No, that's good.
So what are some of the things that you feel like are changes that you see on the horizon there now with all of the changes that are going on at Saddleback?
Oh man, I think the biggest stuff is, I feel like for various reasons, you know, online has always been we've had the luxury of being able to develop out online for a long time, and you know, COVID,
right.
wasn't something that was extremely hard for us because we had an online strategy and we had a very core baked into us, a small group strategy. So groups were able to still connect or isolate with your people. And so because of that, I think it was difficult for various reasons, but it was also, I think we were ready for it. And, but I think still, I think there is an opportunity to, you know, integrate online in a way that it's not an enemy, but it's a healthy integration. And I think there's going to be more healthy integrations where, you know, I always like, I usually talk about this of like, you know, healthy integration of online doesn't mean it replaces the physical. It just, it integrates. And so I always use the example of how I use technology or digital with my wife, where, you know, we text and interact with each other 24/7, but it doesn't replace the spatial relationship that we come home to every night.
Yeah.
And we just know how to integrate. And I think there's a lot of those where I still think there are times, you know, my church is this and many churches are this, is that when we came back, you know, out of COVID, there was this default that we still need to get people in the room. And I would all, you know, many of us would say, you know, the room is great for a lot of things, but it's not necessarily the best option for everything. And can online or can something, you know, asynchronized or whatever work alongside that? And I think we're going to have more of a I think because we have a new leader, there's going to be an opportunity to reevaluate those things in a way that's more where sometimes when you just, you've been in a mode and you, it's just some stuff can be sacred cows as much as you don't want it to be. It just is. And I think that's what I'm excited to go, hey, if we want to train parents, maybe hosting a yearly parent event isn't the best option. Maybe we should. And this is something we've done. Actually, we have saddlebackparents.com where they've done like this kind of micro kind of drip stuff where they've done parenting tips. And so like just, but in all areas, like our kids ministry is a great example. We're still wrestling through, like, we love creating this kids program every week for online, but really what does that actually look like? And so like, they've started to do like text follow-ups of like, hey, your kids learned about it this weekend, this topic this week, and this week talk about this. And so, but there's like these, as you guys know, there's infinite ways you can integrate digital. It's not just service. And so I think there's just going to be more ground there that will be the other thing I will say that's very like I think will become more important, at least it's my hunch, I could be totally wrong, is we've really leaned in the last 6 months into our extension program of hosting home, like having volunteers host services. And we have 15 of those right now. And
That's so cool, dude.
We're doing a big push not this weekend, but next weekend. I just had a meeting with my boss where we're looking at expanding that. And I think those will become more of a the third level expressions of our church. And I feel like there's a chance they're either going to become second or first level expressions. Where they don't feel like second.
So unpack that. When you say third level, against what are you comparing?
I'm saying like we have locations, like campuses, and then we have like venues that are connected to locations. And then we have the online community extensions that are, you're very far away. And I just think by default, you know, you can kind of lean towards the campus locations because they have larger staff, they have all these things. And I think, I think there's a chance, you know, we're going to see, like, I think of the 15 that are meeting now, and we, those 15 are of all sizes. We have some that are 40 people and we have some that are, you know, 10 people. And I really, we're trying to, like, one of my big goals this year is by next July, I'm trying to get 100 of those. Like, I want 100 of those. And we, and I want, and one of the struggles have always been like, if you're far away, you can feel very isolated. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to create our own extension community where they're connecting with each other. So it is like a more of a network of itself. And, but there's just a lot, I mean, you guys know this, you guys have done this, like this is, there's all sorts of learnings we're trying to figure out with resources. And, but I do feel like at times they have not felt like they're part of our church because they are something other than a campus. And I'm trying to, like, I have a conversation with our web guy, like, hey, can we make this visible on our navigation so that you know, there are small things that make you feel like, you know, you're not a second class
citizen. Yeah, it legitimizes it.
Part of it. Yeah. So, yeah.
That's on a physical campus. That's the version of a video venue when it's the overflow video venue, right? And people feel like they're kind of abandoned in there because all they can do is watch a video. And it's Jay, I'm telling you, I hear you talk, and I think there's people listening to this that one of the things that go through their minds is, okay, dude, you're in a big church, you got all the resources, mm-hmm. you got all this stuff going on for you. So it's kind of easy. Can you tell us a little bit about the challenges? Because I don't think people understand that regardless of the size of the church, there are challenges that you have to overcome. I'm going to go ahead and say the thing that I know for a fact by watching your ministry, by watching what you do, you're not afraid to try. Mm-hmm. And you're not afraid to fail. And that might, I already gave up your answer there, but tell us a little bit about the challenges though.
Yeah. There's definitely lots of challenges. It's, I will say, I think one of the larger challenges for everybody, whatever your vision of, you know, online church integration, whatever that means for you. But I think the biggest one is that you're trying to create a picture. You're trying to create something new that doesn't already exist. And one mm-hmm. of the hardest things is just legitimately changing people's minds that church has been done this way. And if you tinker with that, you know, like if I'm sitting across the room from you and you're like a 5-point Calvinist, for me to even try to argue that maybe that's a little too extreme for me. And I might not, you might, yeah. because of the logical argument, if I try to dislodge one of those points of the tulip, I'm a heretic. And somebody gets to a point where everything right. needs to stack in order for it to be. And I think doing church is that way for a lot of our leaders and a lot of our mm-hmm. staff and a lot of our volunteers. And so I think the hardest thing for somebody being a digital champion is you have to change people's minds. And you have to somehow argue that you still believe in how your church does church, but you just think there might be another, you know, phase of evolution, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, where we can go up, you yeah. know what I mean? And even that I joke, I'm mm-hmm. like, I'm talking about micro, not macro evolution, let's calm.
Yeah.
You know, and so right. So I think that's the largest thing is that, you know, like I have, and Jason knows this about me, that I usually over communicate my value of in-person because I want everybody to know as much as I believe in digital. I also, my wife and I and our kids, we go to church physically. So I believe there's something to that. But I think for the average person, it's just like making your case. So normally it's like, I usually tell people who are starting, get quick wins and get people to trust you. And so I think there was a value in me being at my church for a while. There's a value in me getting you know, going to seminary. These are all check boxes to show that I know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I care about our church. And then it's like trust. Trust is earned. And the more I saw quick wins of digital integration, that I wasn't like necessarily, hey, I'm saying that we got to be all in like VR chat tomorrow. I think people started to see like, oh, like they could trust me. And I think just changing people's minds, honestly, for me is the number one. Like still with people, I'm like, hey, like, this is what I'm not saying this, I'm saying this. And mm-hmm. because there's a natural defense. So I think that's the big thing outside of trying things and all that. But I think just staff yeah. leadership, just have their own views and, you know, yeah. So there's a bunch of stuff I could say, but I think that's honestly, just how do you just, you know, reforming, like why is it in America, we have more denominations, more networks, because it's easier to leave the denomination, start a church than it is to reform within the church.
Well, there we go.
Mm-hmm. And so with churches thinking about digital, you have the same, it's easier for me to leave and start mm-hmm. than for me to change, because reforming from within is hard. And I wish, and many people have argued this, I wish more churches in the turn of the century would have stayed and fought for some things versus letting them yeah. think about all the universities that started in Christian roots and just kind of went off the deep end, because a bunch of the more solid evangelical people or whatever you want to say left because it got too hard.
Yeah.
Now I'm not saying I understand why they left, but I think churches, it's hard. It's hard to reform from within.
Yeah. And you know, to your point, one could argue even, and this is where, it's where it gets really sticky. I mean, you're talking about Calvinism, and most of the time I diffuse that by just throwing out the time-space continuum and just saying, I'm a Calvinist outside the time-space continuum and I'm an Arminian inside. And that pretty much does it for him. But, you know, one could even argue, even for like the whole Protestantism thing, got started because we felt like we needed to leave in order to do something new.
Yep.
Right.
We and it
just
protest.
Splintered from there. Yeah. We just splintered from there, which interestingly enough could have occurred in Acts when we see, you know, the Jews and the Gentiles, and they came together and it made a decision. No, we're going to stay together. We're going to stay together while allowing you Gentiles to have a different expression than we do while being together. I can't even wrap my brain around that, because that just doesn't exist in our modern world, where you could just leave, you have another option. But they didn't think that way. They just thought, okay, we'll let you have your different expression. You're Gentiles. You only got three rules, you know? And but we're all going to be following Jesus. We all have this one spirit, one Lord, one baptism. Let's stay together while being diverse at the same time. That takes work, dude. Yeah. And that, in my mind, just is this wonderful expression of, you know, what Jesus really wanted. You know, by this shall all men know you're my disciples, for the love you have for one another. And even the notion of online itself, oddly enough, can create yet another separation, where you have online church and offline church, or online, you know, physical versus digital, or whatever you want to do. We can honestly be creating yet another splinter without meaning to, just so that we can help people wrap their brains around something. We can inadvertently create yet another split.
Yep.
And so what you're saying, Jay, is, you know, well noted, because, you know, I've been there too, where just I want to help people wrap their brains around it without negating the wonderful and deep, meaningful spiritual experiences that they've had in the past around certain models, certain experiences, legacy, history. All of those things are valid. I don't want to just throw that away either, right? And I don't want to make people feel like, oh, what happened to you 15 years ago was garbage. Who am I to say that? You know, just give me a few years and we'll invent things to be passionate about, you know, that our kids and grandkids are going to think are old fogey, you know.
Yep.
Just wait a little bit. We're going to be there. And so I think you're kind of onto something there, Jay. How, because you have somehow figured out a way, you've had the fortunate ability to be in a place that already has a little bit of a different model to begin with, being based on small groups.
Yeah.
You know, they have the large gatherings, but that's not where the real work gets done. There's a huge emphasis underground that people don't see with the small group thing, that you've been able to somehow, in that decentralized, distributed network fashion, express online. And you've talked a lot about, because I know I watch your YouTube channel, you know, like one of these fanboys, you talk a lot about having your online expression mirror what your on-site expression is.
Yeah.
You've had the fortunate opportunity there of having like a small group-based church, small group-first church, and then doing your sites and your other expressions online that make other sites. Well, that just makes sense. What if you're in a church that doesn't have that?
Yeah. I mean, there's
what do you do?
I know that's the big thing. For sure, it was a layup for me, because I started on last week I celebrated 10 years full time as the online pastor here. And
kudos,
it was crazy to think about that. But one of the first things I did was when I became full time, I had done it part time for a couple of years, but I got brought in and they kind of treated me as a, like kind of an affinity leader, where you had the women's lead, you had the men's lead, and then I was like the online lead. And so I was over all the online groups. And so it was very much, I kind of got my roots in being a groups pastor. You know what I mean? So that's what I did. I contact groups, I figured it out and all that. And I learned all that. And so for sure it's baked in, because essentially even in our mega church, you know, whatever you want to call it, it's, hey, if you're in a group during the week, you know, you have those relationships And that's where you're known and loved and supported. And so we might have, you know, 15, 20,000 people, but, you know, it's my group. And so that model is really easy to decentralize. So I would say for somebody who's not, you know, I personally think if you are trying to do something against the grain at your church, it's going to be very difficult. Doesn't mean you can't push through, but there's a reason why, you know, early adopters usually, there's a lot of gravestones. And I think either that's a calling, you know what I mean? Or it's idiotic, you know what I mean? And so I would have a very, I would be very clear. Like there was a woman on our team, not on my team, but on a larger church team. And she was actually pushing some things that I actually really agreed with, but I told her, I said, you are pushing some buttons that I think we need to push, but I just want to tell you as a friend, like, I don't think you're going to be here at the end of this. Like, I just politically, like, I just say, just as an organization, you know, a church is both an organism and an organization, as much as we want to think about it, especially as it grows. Yeah. And I was right. She was not on staff a year later. But she helped us push some things forward. And I think sometimes as an individual at a church, you might be called to raise some questions that are needed, but you might not be the one to run it all the way through. And that's been you and God and how you're feeling and your makeup. But sometimes I do think, not usually, 9 times out of 10, I think I always come from the perspective, and this might be a more American CEO version of me, where I go, I am not the senior pastor, or I'm not an elder at my church. And so I'm submitting to the vision that God is speaking to my pastor and to my elders. And so I normally, personally, I default to echo that vision. And so I will bring up the point that if somebody wants something like, let's say Saddleback has done, but they don't have that model, I'll go, hey guys, you want this in your online community, but you don't have this at your physical church.
Yeah.
So you need to do the root. Like, we have groups because my pastor is in a group, talks about groups, cancel things. So I usually ask that dumb question, or I point it out. I go, like, you want this here? Like at the end of the day, and is this idea that online just amplifies who you are already. And so don't be surprised if it's not happening online, bring the microscope back. It's probably not happening locally. And so, like, people said this during COVID, like, why don't I have more people like filling out response cards online and during COVID? And I would ask, how many do you have every week? Like, physically, prior to COVID.
Right.
It's like, I think there's going to be more just because the buttons, like, right there. Like, no.
Yeah.
Like, people do what they're told and what's the culture. And so, so that's where I would go. And then sometimes it's just understanding the role of your online community of, like, okay, are you, what I go back to, like, what's the actual purpose of this? And I just think most churches, I talk about it as, like, there are location-based online, like, ministries that they're reaching, like, the St. Louis area, or they're reaching. And just because you can reach the world doesn't mean you should. And then there's location-based. These are the people like DJ Soto and stuff that want to do, you know, VR chat or we're experimenting with some of this with our extension. And I think the question is, what is your strategy? Like, what is your vision? And I think it comes back to vision. And I would go to the pastor and just get a little bit more focused. So that's usually my role, is if I'm talking to an online guy, I usually say, like, hey, let's just have a conversation with your senior pastor, and I'll ask the question. And I could be the one, and here's the deal, because I'm the friend coming into the meeting, I can ask the question and get my head chopped off. And I'm, you know, this is like the leader of the French Revolution, and I'm getting the guillotine too, you know? Like,
yeah.
Sometimes
it's
just the reality. And so, but that's where an outsider is usually super helpful. I always tell that to friends too. I know this is a consulting ministry of some sort. I would always say the value of hiring a consultant is the consultant can bring up ideas. Usually the person in the role can't.
Yeah.
Like,
that's
true.
I can push
things. And so I usually will meet with, if I'm consulting with a friend or something, I usually say, hey, what are some things you've wanted to push? Like, let me push them for you. Like, I will push the ideas, because guess what? I'm going to be gone in 3 months. Yeah. And if they're bad ideas, it's on me.
Usually, you know, that's what I tell churches. I say, I'm just a mall cop. I don't have a gun. I cannot shoot anybody. I cannot arrest anybody. I'm just a mall cop. So I just shine the light. So hey, here's my flashlight.
Yeah,
here's
what's
going on. And I agree with you because I hear you describe this situation. And I think the challenge for a lot of churches and pastors and leaders is the idea that because it's an online church, because it's different, is going to also modify the outcome. See, that the outcome of the online church is the exact same of the physical church. I mean, it's the church. So the outcome doesn't change though, but the strategy, the way that we might do what we're going to do, the way we're going to do groups, the way we're going to do the service, whatever that looks like, it's not going to change the outcome that we want of people like grow in Christ, spiritual formation. Like those things don't change. And I think there's a fear out there that we're completely modifying the gospel by introducing technology into the process of reaching people. So I think sometimes the idea of explaining, and usually my conversation sometimes with churches is getting them to understand the numbers. Right. So it's understanding like you got an opportunity now to expand your numbers of reach. You may not be different. Like you said, the connection cards, they still going to be like one by one. The discipleship is still going to be one on one. A real discipleship is going to happen in a very relational way. That means we cannot have a relationship with 5,000 people at the same time and think let's go online because of the numbers. Right. I have this. Famous that only two people look at it, Twitter post on Easter season, on Easter week, that I put, okay, Easter Sunday's coming, let's the church number game begins. Because, you know, the week after Easter, all these churches are posting their numbers like, well, we had 30,000 people yesterday. We had 40,000 people at Easter service. It becomes this, and I think that's when, in a way, Jay, devalue what online really can be to the church. So I think bringing that back to the reality of, no, it's just one more way. And I love how you put this thing of a church extension, that it really unifies the physical with digital and the models. I like that idea, the church extension, because it doesn't eliminate the physical. And I think that's the battle the church are having, church leaders, like eliminates, the digital is going to eliminate the physical, with people going to stay home. And I was like, man, it's all about the experience.
Yep.
And how you put the experience in place.
And I would just say, and I'm probably like, I am by default like a pastor at a church. And I think 85% of my brain is thinking about my church, like I do. And I just share some of my musings other places when I can, and I'm pretty inconsistent on it, but I do that firstly because it's helpful for me when I record something or write something down. It is really helpful. I think we all know this, and I would encourage anybody to write down their strategy, even if it's bad. I think writing it down will and I've had the luxury of 12 years of writing down and sharing my thoughts, and there are things on the internet that of things I've said that I now completely disagree with because of that. You know what I mean? Like I think there is something about that process of jotting it down. And usually that's what I do myself. I do it with another church. I go, okay, here's a whiteboard. Like, what is your actual strategy? And I, you know, and I draw the lines and I, are you comfortable with that? Are you not? You know, and so I think there's something about that, but I will say at the heart of it, our church's online strategy and how I think about it, it is built because I know my pastor and I know my elders and I know my church paradigm, and we've built something that makes sense for us. And so if we were, you know, a simple church model, if we were an Acts model, whatever the model was, we would adapt it. And I think that's why the luxury I've had is I've had longevity in the space. And so I've had the ability to go, there is something about that 10,000 hours, you know, we were thinking about this for a long time before it was cool, and or even thinking it was relevant. You know, I know Dave Adams said, I know he was just on, you know, he says he was like the online pastor, you know what I mean? Which I don't know how he knows that. I feel like he just made that up. I'm calling Dave out on that. And so, but the, so, but like the joke is there wasn't many. And yeah, I remember I've told this story many times. I remember they created the role online pastor at my church. And I had one of my good friends tell me not to take the role because he did not think the role would be around in a year. Cause it was like 2012. He's like, yeah, I don't think. Right. And he's a very respectable guy who you guys would know who he is. And it was like, because that was the tone. And it's crazy now that in 2022, like it's a prime role. Like I've yeah. gotten like 10 emails of people asking me, do you know anybody that wants to be an online pastor? And it's like, yeah. I don't know enough people. And so
it's a hot ticket.
It is. It is. And I think that's a great thing. It needs to be because some of this stuff is really needed. But I think I've spent a lot of time. I know my church, and I know the digital strategy, at least the overarching stuff. But I know where I spend a lot of time and work, and I do this with my leaders and my team is integrating that. And I would just encourage anybody listening to this is, you know, you kind of glean and learn from everybody. You know, everyone's doing, I was learning from Jason years ago, you know, looking at what Westside Family was doing. And, oh, this is so cool. Oh, look, they're filming in homes and like on a couch. How cool is this? Like they're doing this before COVID. This is nuts. I didn't even know what COVID was. And they're all on a couch doing this. Who knew that was going to be normative? But the thought is I'm learning, but I'm taking it back. And again, I go back, like when Paul says this, like when he goes to the Corinthians, he's being like the Corinthians. When he's going to Rome, he's being, and right. I think that's important. There are things like, for example, I just did an event 2 days ago. somebody in my community does a lot of stuff in VR chat. And he said, Jay, could I host you for an event in VR chat? And I'm like, sweet, let's do it. And so we did a VR chat. I did this like hour long meetup in VR chat. And I did like a little sermon and we had like 12 people, all anime, you know, characters.
Mm-hmm.
VR chat is a whole nother dimension. You know, mm-hmm. like what's going on right. there is a whole nother. And I think, and so for me, I know that VR chat's going to be important in the future and it's important now, but the way my church is going to embrace it is it doesn't mean we're going to go launch a VR chat ministry. It means I'm going to launch a bunch of groups through this guy. And I'm trying to create him as right. like the man of peace. But it doesn't mean I'm going to allocate yeah. 80% of my resources to become a VR chat ministry. Because guess what? I think Minecraft, I think Roblox, I think all these other things are as important. And I think that's the hard thing with digital is there are infinite amount of spaces. People will argue like Reddit's yeah. important, Discord's important. You know,
that
this is
so
not,
true.
It's just hard. It's hard.
Yeah.
Twitch is important. And it's like, yeah, but here's the deal. You got to know who you're reaching, what you're called to do, and then pick the primary audiences. And then once you get that foundation, then you could start to be like me. Like I'm messing around in VR chat because I've been in the role for 10 years. And you know what I mean? Like I'm not mm-hmm. like year one, year two online guy. You know what I mean? Because my yeah. pastor, if I did that year one, they'd be like, Jay, VR chat, what are you talking about? The average age of our church is 50 and they're not on VR chat. You know what I mean? But you know, so I, you know, I'm probably getting in trouble right now, but that's how I would think about it. So.
No, you bring up a great point on the infinite location. Because if you think of like platform as place, and
yes.
if you think of, you know, where Jesus is sending everybody, like even the diversity of the disciples is kind of crazy and genius at the same time. Because Jesus kind of knew that diverse group was going to reach all different kinds of people in all different kinds of places. In fact, you know, he purposefully like stuck people in different scenarios. And I just think the way that you just described it, by understanding first and foremost, the decentralized group nature in which your church runs can be the platform by which you empower people to start up a group in whatever kind of place that Jesus has sent them, as they kind of are missionaries called to that space, without you being the person doing it all, right? You just let that person be who Jesus called them to be. Just like, you know, I think Peter was okay after everything, that Paul went on the crazy trips that he went on, you know, and Paul was okay with the fact that Peter stayed in Jerusalem.
Yep.
You know, because both were called to different places, but you need to have more, you need to be able to do your leadership development and your empowerment at a different scale in order to make that happen. And if it's all dependent upon you, there are, I mean, even on the on-site space, there's way more work for just one person. Mm-hmm. You add on the digital space on top of that, you're just going to run yourself in the ground. You've got to figure it out somehow, how to decentralize yourself.
I love, one of my favorite verses that I usually bring up with churches is that Romans verse where Paul says that, you know, I wish to come to you, but I don't need to because you already have a church. And Paul, we know this from Paul, that he wanted to go to places that didn't have churches. And so his calling, right, like as much as he would commit a couple of years to a physical like location like Ephesus and build it up and then leave, he definitely always was scavenging. So I think in Paul's mind, Paul is more of the consultant. Like he is literally jumping around and then he's raising up people to be grounded and go the long haul. Yeah. And so I think and Paul saw things differently. And I just happen to be a little wired a little weirdly where I'm like, I love being rooted locally, but I kind of drift a little bit here and there. And sometimes I get reminded of that where I was just doing some work. I was working with somebody in our community reached out to me. They were actually hosting services in a Second Life, which is like a word I hadn't heard in a while. Right. I had read recently Sim Church, a couple like just recently, and they talk about Second Life there, and Bobby from Life Church gets mentioned. And I know that was a big part of their, of that expansion, but I didn't know people were using it. Well, anyways, I logged in there and I showed up to one of their services, and it was so funny because like Second Life software is like total, like it like hogs so much of your CPU and you're like, right, it's like lagging. I felt like I was running like an AOL browser. Like, oh, I was like, what is going on right now? But there's a whole community in there that I had a woman who literally was using YouTube and they were watching our services every week. And it was really cool. Now I got a little distracted and probably spent too much time working with them, but I get curious. Like I'm a little bit of a squirrel where I'm like, wow. Now I don't think this thing they're doing, it was reaching 40 people. I don't know what they're doing is really going to go to 1,000 because the problem with this experience was there's only so many people that can be in a room, which VR has some of those limitations right now still.
It does.
Outside of what I saw, that crazy demo of the new Meta Ape thing, they had like 4,500 people in one event, which was crazy. I don't know if you guys saw this preview. The ape guys I'm forgetting the ape crypto, what's it called, ape, why am I forgetting it right now?
NFT stuff.
Yeah, the NFT stuff. That group has they're trying to build a metaverse. They have some funding to build a metaverse. They did a pilot where they did a drop. It was the start to end experience, but they were able to have simultaneously, I think it was 4,200 people in one room.
Man.
And you can see this. They actually recorded it. And it was just a demo. Like they're building something. I'll find the clip and send it to you. But it was really cool. I saw it because Altcoin Daily YouTube channel, which they're one of the more popular crypto channels, but they did a preview of it. But it shows where we're going, where right now, like Horizons and VR chat, once you get more than 15 people in a room, it gets really laggy.
Yeah,
but
right,
we're going to get to a point where you can have 1,000 people in a room.
Yeah.
And that's going to change things. You know what I mean? So I don't even know how we got to that. Mm-hmm. Anyways, we're totally rabbit trail here.
I like how we can tag line on that, on, because I watch your conversation with Jeff Reed on decentralization of the church. Mm-hmm. Which I think it's an interesting term. I mean, you're saying like about yourself, very grounded on a local church, right? And so how actually this is, it's developing, because it's a new terminology. It's a new church word that's getting around now. And I think it's very important because I think the church in general, church leaders, they should pay attention to these changes. So what that, what is the decentralized church? What does it actually look like to you guys?
Yeah, you know, for, and again, I'm very, I think we're in secondary, third level issues here, where I think there's a lot of ways to slice and dice this, where I'm not going to argue that it's not theological. I think it just, you know, I always think of it like if I look at somebody like DJ Soto, who's reaching people in all these VR spaces, like I see him as the missionary out in the boonies, like in somewhere in Africa or mm-hmm. somewhere in South America or in India. Like his church is not going to look like the church I go to here in Southern California. It's mm-hmm. based off mm-hmm. the people you're reaching. This is why we have famous stories like Peace Child, and why that's such a crazy story is because it's a whole nother people group. And I think the people that, you know, it's funny, I was doing that VR chat thing and, you know, we're hanging out and the people just casually start dropping the F-bomb because of how the space is. And they apologize because they knew I was a pastor, but I was like, you guys are good, but it's a whole nother space. The same way as it's normal in there for a 45-year-old man to be like an anime woman character. You know what I mean? Where I think it's completely weird, but it's normal for them. And so it's going to change the terms. And so I say that, like, for us, the way we think about this right now for our local church is, like, the online community is this collective of physical and online and everybody. It's like the community and the crowd. Where we become a campus, where I put on my campus pastor, and is when we have our mm-hmm. extension communities. And so I'm over the online community, but where I have, like, I would say my deep community, where they're moving into our church, is when they host a group or they start an extension. And so that's mm-hmm. our, like, our digital mm-hmm. and our physical kind of merge together. And it is murky. It is weird. Because, like, I'm technically a campus pastor at our church, and I report to our multi-site pastor, but I also in a weird way help our other campuses think about digital in some ways, even though that's not my primary job. And so it is very murky. And so I just think that's how we think about decentralized church and how we integrate it, because we have all these locations. But I just, on a larger level though, I do believe, and this is already happening, I just think that there will be, it just feels like, and I know Dave talks about this in his book, Metachurch, where I do believe that there will be more micro churches with many churches than mega churches in the future. And I don't think you're going to have as many mm-hmm. like churches that have 10,000 people all meeting in one location. I think you're going to have way more, like, you're going to have women and men starting, you know, YouTube channels and preaching and teaching, and then building small house church type of networks off of that. I just think, you know, that's what Twitch is. That's what all these other communities are. And I just, I think you're going to have more of that. Doesn't mean the mega church and that model isn't going to be effective. I still think there's something, I mean, this is why the Mormon church is so good at digital, because it is centralized and they have one budget, and there's advantages to that. And I still think that model will work. I just think, if you look at some of these other places, especially when you move into places that I do a lot of work in and interact with people, and I know you guys do too, but if you look at the Middle East, if you look at parts of, you know, you move deeper into Asia, like, this has been normative for a mm-hmm. long time already. And so I just think we look at, especially this evangelical expression of church that I benefit from and I actually really do like, but it functions because there's this freedom here. That's just very unique. And so I just think decentralized, that way of just, you know, groups of 15 people meeting together, watching a service and expressing church in their physical air, I think there's going to be a lot more of that, especially as we see, and this is the big challenge in the US, you have a lot of people, now who knows what the movement will be, but you see a lot of people moving away from cities to rural areas, mm-hmm. homesteading, doing all these things that I think will become more normal. I mean, I hope it becomes more normal so house prices here in California calm down and my kids can actually afford. I don't care. I own my house, but I want my kids to be able to afford a house without it costing like $5 million by the time they buy.
So. Yeah. It is. And that was my impression, because again, I think the decentralized church is going to look different from one church to another, but I think many times pastors and leaders, they think that a new model means the other has to be canceled, the other has to be eliminated. And I think there's different models in church that can coexist. You know, it'd be hard for somebody in the home to respond the same way you respond in a large group meeting, in a big campus. I think that's the challenge for a lot of people, because they feel like, well, if people are sitting home, they're not worshiping. I mean, they're, I'm telling you, I had meetings, it was last summer. It was a funny season for me. In a matter of 2 months, I had like 8 elders meetings, like with different churches. And with those like lead pastors saying, can you come and talk to my elders about this? And explain how this actually looked like, well, why this is real, like why there's real worship and there's real engagement, and that, like, talk about it, like the reality of it. And that's what I gather by having those meetings and those experiences. Like, I have the fortune that not many people have. My impression, you had the same thing in my church. They like run the online church, do whatever you want to do, like totally like blank check with blank canvas, and said, we're not worried about it. We just need to see what this thing looks like. And we're able to go really far on what we did because of that freedom. But the reality is, the majority of churches, the majority of online guys here listening to this, they don't have that freedom. They have to fight hard to gain some kind of a ground to say, hey, it's okay if somebody, 15 people are meeting at home and the service is gonna look like a little different than look like in a big church, in a big room. So I think that's what I'm trying to reconcile that to people listening, because, you know, they're the ones in the front lines fighting for the opportunity because they see the potential. Since they're in the front lines of the online experience, they know the potential. I remember my frustration when I was in another church in another state before I came to Ohio. And I had this family watching from Germany. And they just loved the church and they were watching. And I went to the lead pastor and said, hey, I got this family from Germany. They want to plug in. And they're like, oh, tell them to find a local church there somewhere. And I was like, I know, but I've been talking to them and I'm talking about... And I said, well, what if we help them to start a house campus right there? And we provide them the resources and we're like, oh, no, we don't want to get involved in any of that. And they can keep watching or they can find it. So it was that tension of me seeing the potential that the online could bring to the church experience, to people's houses, but leadership saying, no, we're not going to go there. And I think a lot of online pastors are in the same boat right now. They're like, I experience the potential every Sunday. So I think from our side is how we help these pastors, how we help the churches to see that your online church model is not going to destroy, cancel what you have in the physical. Actually, it's looking at how we actually, I love the word integration, how we actually bring this thing together. So both sides can have a great experience that's designed for their for the specific audience where they are. But at the end of the day, we're talking about the same things. We're talking about discipleship. We're talking about spiritual formation. We're talking about experience with God. We're talking about transformation. Those are the things we're after, right? So I think we gotta figure out a way to help these pastors. And now that we got all the answers, God knows, Jason knows, Jay knows. You guys know how much I don't have all the answers. So I go after you guys to get some of these answers.
And really that's the, you know, and I actually just did this, this is my only shameless promotion. I did this TED Talk video of kind of how I'm thinking about digital.
I saw that.
You could check out all my, for those who are listening to this, check it out on my YouTube channel. But the, you know, I think one of the hard parts is that there are simple things you can listen to something like this, you can read a book and you can implement. But I do think philosophically, we have to bake digital as one of the prime ways that people can either engage you or be discipled by you into the cake at the beginning. And I think what's going on is COVID definitely revealed to a lot of high level leaders like, oh, digital can happen. But they're trying to add it on. And I think you have to, you know, and we know this, like you think about this, like and not to get all political here, but you know, part of the blessings and the curse of the US not handling the topic of slavery at the birth of the country was it lingered and it caused lasting problems. Now, the US may have not actually started if we wouldn't have just decided to start. And so there's this blessing and curse mm-hmm. of not solving it at the founding. You know what I mean? And you read some of these first fathers, like Thomas Jefferson famously has many drafts of the Declaration of Independence where he gets rid of slavery. But guess what? He couldn't get everybody to agree on it. And so maybe the revolution wouldn't have actually happened. And so but there's a lot of good in that, but the bad is it lingered and it's still lingering today. It's caused lasting issues. And I think this is why, crazy, you know, I'm overplaying my analogy here, but I think with online, we gotta just not think physical. People are coming out of seminary and just go physical. And they go, oh, maybe some digital here sprinkled in. And I think what we have to do is we have to go back to the drawing board and think about, okay, let's integrate this at the core and not just an add-on. And I think that takes hard work. And that's why it's usually, you need somebody who can really like take up the soil and bake it in and who believes in everything you're doing. And I think that's why it's hard. It's easy to start an online campus. It's easy to start and stop a stream. It's easy to run Facebook ads, but it's different to actually in a healthy way, bake in digital, you know, like Resi and all these platforms have made a lot of this stuff pretty simple. And guess what?
Yeah.
Streaming now works a lot better than it did 10 years ago. And And so, but you know, like for example, like I think we're beyond just having a church online platform experience. Like I love Chop and I love what it's done, but I think some of what Chop does is a little archaic. I think there's some new stuff we could be doing. And so I think that's the fun.
I want to be careful. I'm very grateful for that platform.
But
today that platform represents the lowest number of attendees in my, like I actually got to the point right now that I removed my volunteer from doing chat because nobody's engaged in a platform, and platforms like YouTube and Facebook, that's where conversations are happening. So you're right. I think being able to go with the technology, right? The things that are happening out there in the market and being able to follow along what the need that people are having to really be part of the service. In a very meaningful way. Like, what are the things that actually going to engage the audience and start looking more objectively that way? So one example that we're doing here, you've probably seen maybe some of the posts, you know, one of the outcomes of our online ministry was the Church the Bar.
Mm-hmm.
And for the Church the Bar, the services model differently because we do the same message we do on the main campus, but every 7 minutes, the pastor is going to ask a question and we got to give time. Do you know what this hit me? Like it hit me like 2 months ago. I was like, why am I not using those questions on Sunday on the chat room during the message in the main auditorium? So the online church now, the online streaming are getting the questions that we get at the bar for the same message. So they get to, so it provokes that conversation and is in the context of the message. In the little thing like that, you create a more engagement with the audience. So I think that's things like this, things that facilitate the conversation. I think it's important for people to like, okay, what can you think, things that are going to engage the people that they're worshiping with you, and what ideas are going to get from them. I love feedback. I love like people that are listening to us or watch the services. Tell me about the experience because I need, like, there's always ways to make this better. I like to hear back from people.
I was curious, and I know we're kind of coming up on our time. This is because we're just talking as friends here. I was curious, did anybody pick up Matthew Ball's book, The Metaverse? Anybody's
no, I have not.
No.
You know this guy?
No.
Oh no. So Matthew Ball is like he's one of the main. He was like an Amazon. He was like over Amazon Studios, or he did something in Amazon. But now he's one of the lead venture capitalist guys around VR, and he's like he influences like Tim Sweetie or whatever from Fortnite and all that Epic Games, but he has a site, Matthew Ball, but he wrote a very famous, like I would say famous because it's in tech circles, but he wrote a very famous article a couple years ago on the metaverse, but he wrote his first book. But yeah, if you guys have, those listening, if you don't know who Matthew Ball is, he's a very long-winded writer, but he writes the most about the metaverse. And I think he makes one of the most legitimate arguments about the metaverse. And I know we were talking very practical. Now I'm getting all futuristic, but, which is part of this conversation. It's how we,
exactly.
but I haven't jumped into it, but I've read a bunch of his writings. I'll follow up with you guys some links so you guys can check out. But he's a fun young guy, but he just came out. His book literally came out on Tuesday. So I have a long plane ride here in a couple
days. That's great.
And so I'm like, I'm saving it for my plane ride. Oh, sweet.
Yes.
That's awesome. You know, when you were talking about, you know, like this whole metaverse thing, and Joey, with your previous question on decentralized church, because those tend to work together. One of the things that I feel like there's a nuance that we shouldn't ignore when we're talking about creating a decentralized form of church, because sometimes I feel like people hear like, oh, we just want to make the church smaller and more distributed. And I don't know that that's what the next expression or the next iteration of church will become. I think it's actually already here, in that instead of the pastor feeling like he's, you know, he now has competition with the online expression and the on-site expression, instead of feeling like that's competition, we've already decided that the integration of those things synergizes and makes it more powerful. What if we had that same idea at a completely higher level, where believers, churches, pastors begin to synergize with one another in creative ways that their congregants are already doing, but we're not sharing data or being intentional about it? So I know that all of us, you know, if I were to just ask how many of us, you know, saw the latest, you know, Life Church series at the movies, you know, probably all of us did, right? Or listen to the podcast sermon from North Point. All of us did, right?
Yeah.
Or read this, you know, Dave Adamson's book.
Yeah, yeah.
Or listen to, you know, Maverick City Worship, right? We are already decentralizing the church. We are already, you know, like chopping it up and, you know, doing all of this church stuff on demand already. And each one of these little siloed organizations is counting all of the analytics from all these people that are double and triple dipping every single day. But we're not sharing that data, and we're not helping one another, and we're not creating a cohesive strategy that actually helps people. They're just kind of putting it together mashup style on their own, and they're not really sharing it with anyone else. But I think that could be the next frontier of decentralized church, where instead of all of us feeling like we need to go to the one source, you know, our local congregation, the building, or the Sunday expression as the end all be all of everything that we are, you know, in our spiritual walk, but we were given the freedom and the map and the network of all of the other believers in the greater sphere of the Big C Church working together and understand how it all relates, much like blockchain does. If we could get at that level and begin to work together, dude, how much more could we do? And how much more could we help people by allowing people to specialize in their area of expertise that they're really, really good at? Like some churches are really, really good at sending missionaries, you know? Some churches are really, really good at worship. Some are really awesome at creating like these moments, these magical experiences, you know? Some are really good at media. what if we just actually worked together and understood where each part of the body of Christ is actually good at what they do, and connected the greater body of Christ, not just the local body of Christ, the body, big B, body of Christ. What could we do with that? And that to me, that's decentralized church, which is a subtle nuance. I'm not trying to make church smaller. I'm trying to make church bigger, much bigger, much more connected.
Yeah.
Even though it may have a smaller local expression, it has a mega network backing behind it that makes it much more powerful than it ever could be on its own. Anyway, I'll get off the soapbox.
Yeah. Listen, I want to respect our guys' times. I appreciate jumping in. We got to do this again, man.
Yeah,
I mean, for real. I mean, just chatting. That's what we do. Before we go, I got to ask you this question because I follow you on Twitter.
Yeah.
And I know this is a big deal for you.
Uh-oh.
What is your prediction for the Lakers this next season?
Oh, gosh. you know, one of our pastimes as a Laker fan is summer time and photoshopping every superstar with a Laker jersey on it. It's one of our amazing cultures. So it's just part of it. We just think everybody should play here. Everybody wants to play here. It doesn't matter. And you know, normally they are right. But I don't know. I think probably realistically, Russell Westbrook will be a Laker probably till the trade deadline. And then Irving will be bought out and we'll do some kind of dump of Westbrook. And hopefully we'll be like fourth seed going into the playoffs and then maybe have a fighting chance to get to the second round. So I don't see anything else possible. We're in a very tough spot.
If you like NBA, there's so many good reasons to follow Jay Kendra on Twitter. But if you like NBA, it's right on top. Because we're in the middle of Ohio. My son's a big basketball fan.
Of course.
And right now it's all about Lakers.
Of course, yeah.
LeBron James, do you know what I mean? Course. So he's all about Lakers, so he has the jersey and everything.
My favorite thing about Laker culture is that, you know, I'm a diehard Laker fan for sure, but there is a dark side of the Laker culture that we're like the darkest side is like Kobe over LeBron, where like this is where the arguments go, and there's just generally not a very positive culture of like, can we just enjoy where we're at? You know, like, why do I have to pick one? I love LeBron James. Like, I just think he's a great player. And, but like people get all, you know, it's like people always say this, like, who's better, like, you know, Michael or LeBron. And I go, I said, I don't know. I just know LeBron's a better dad. You know, you know, LeBron's not going to strip clubs like Michael Jordan. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, you can slice and dice this however you want, but I like LeBron as the person. So, you know, it's such, you know, and I've grown up on that and I love Kobe Bryant. Like Kobe Bryant is how I fell in love with basketball. So, but it's just fun. I also just love basketball. So I follow, you know, I have league pass and I follow everything. And so I definitely, it's one of my few hobbies. So
awesome. Now, thanks guys. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll continue this conversation. This was
sweet.
Very, very good. Very productive. I hope people really listen. We're going to make sure to share all the ways to connect with Jay. All the 12 people out there that don't know his name, we're going to make sure you have his Twitter account and everything and to follow. I really appreciate your time, dude.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Online Pastor Coach Podcast. Make sure to visit our website, onlinepastorcoaching.com, where you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, and many other podcast platforms so you'll never miss a show. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes. Or if you'd simply tell a friend about the show, that would help us out too. If you like this show, you might want to check out our ebook, A Local Church with a Global Reach. Joey and Jason are available for private coaching. Just send us a message. Now go make a global impact for the kingdom until next time.